Presidente, al Ministerio Parlamentario Espíritu Santo, amén. Ministerio de la Intervención, a veces me quiero decir tanto que coincido con este mega flart. Prima numa frunda de mitna palma la frunda hacia ahí, la niña se dirige a Mendeni, amén. Santo al Ministerio Parlamentario Espíritu Santo, amén. Nel aqom al din il-laqa numru 49 tal-Kumitat Permanenti dwar l-Affarijiet Soċjali, illum it-12 Novembru 2025, issa l-ħin huwa propju ftit minuti wara l-erba' u nofs. Se nagħdihkom kopja tal-miruti biex taraw jekk hemm xi tibdiliet jew korrezzjonijiet. Anna. Iva, l'onorevole Albert Buttigieg.
Kont ġibt l'attenzjoni u naħseb kienet proposta aċċettata li nitkellmu fuq it-tfal li huma ġejjin minn familji tal-proġenieri.
Iva,
jekk kienx ma kienx minitjata biex tidħol fl-aġenda tal-tagħna. Fil-laqat preċedenti konna tkellimna fuq u konna qbilna li nitkellmu fuq l-aġenda fuq it-tfal li għandhom il-ġenituri tagħhom jew qegħdin ġewwa l-ħabs il-kor. U tidħol fil-minuti? Kienet fil-minuti taqbel.
Għandna iktar korrezzjonijiet għall-minuti jekk jogħġobkom? Għandna iktar korrezzjonijiet fil-minuti? Jidher li m'hawnx korrezzjonijiet u għaldaqstant il-minuti huma approvati. Illum fil-laqgħa għandna preżentazzjoni minn Dar Ħosejja dwar riċerka li saret mid-dottoressa Melissa Farley fuq il-prostituzzjoni u l-implikazzjonijiet tagħha fil-kuntest lokali. Għaldaqstant mistiedna hawnhekk mal-mejda l-impjegati u rappreżentanti ta' Dar Ħosejja, Dr. Anna Marija Vella, Dr. Melissa Farley, Mrs. Ann Farrugia u Mrs. Marija Borċ Pellicano. Ann mhijiex preżenti magħna. Please do have a seat, Dr. Farley. I'd like to welcome you to this committee, this parliamentary committee. A warm welcome, both for myself as the chair and also the members on the committee. So we'll be switching to English and using Maltese. Ħanitkellem kemm bil-Malti u kemm bl-Ingliż għal din is-seduta u tar-raġunijiet huma ovvi għaliex dottoressa Farley hija propju titkellem bil-lingwa Ingliża. Ħanaddi f'idejk issa Dr. Anna Marija Vella sabiex tkun tista' tintroduċi din ir-riċerka. Grazzi ħafna.
Tajjeb, mela jiena nitkellem bl-Ingliż maħba Melissa. So first of all we'd like to thank you a lot. For inviting us and for hearing us out. Dr. Melissa Farley is helping Dar Ħosejja to do a study that was given a grant by the Commissioner of Gender-Based Violence, and she will be introducing the study. Before we start, number one, I would like to give the floor our annual report, which I got 5 copies. I didn't know you were 8, but anyway, you can then decide how to divide between you. And I will now introduce Dr. Melissa Farley, who will introduce the film that we are going to see.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. Thank you for speaking in English. Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here. I'm honored to be with you. Thank you for the time. And I would love to present a work in progress, a 4-minute film clip that we're working on. That the film is all survivors of prostitution speaking, and it's in 3 languages, German, Spanish, and English, and it has subtitles. Do we have it up? Oh, please.
marcado por sexo normalizan la violencia contra la mujer. Cada día nos hacen creer, por ser pobres, migrantes, negras, por ser mujeres, que elegimos ser violadas como mecanismo de supervivencia. Nosotras no elegimos la tortura sexual a cambio de comer caliente y un techo. Esa realidad fue construida por una sociedad hipócrita y negadora.
Mehr als 100 Frauen sind in der deutschen Prostitution in den letzten 20 Jahren gestorben. Die meisten von ihnen wurden von Freiern ermordet. Viele dieser Opfer waren Mütter. Ihre verzweifelten Kinder bleiben als Waisen zurück, meistens im Ausland.
Nadie quiere reconocerse como víctima, pedir ayuda de manera desesperada y que nadie nos ayude. Para superar el estigma social, el dolor, es mejor creer que no somos víctimas, que no hay delito y así sobrevivir.
Freie verklagen auch Prostituierte wegen ungenügender Leistung, fehlendem Orgasmus oder zu frühem Orgasmus, auch wegen angeblichen Betrugs, Diebstahl oder Körperverletzung. Sie zeigen Frauen sogar wegen illegaler Prostitution an. Und deutsche Richter geben ihnen Recht. Und Prostituierte zahlen Strafen und Bußgelder, jedes Gefängnis werden von Polizisten und Beamten verfolgt.
Did you understand what the priest was afraid of? I didn't care, I wanted my money for it. They also said having sex with a prostitute is like having a cup of coffee. When you're done, you just throw it out.
The women were beaten so badly, they needed to be hospitalized. They never received any medical treatment. Tell me please now, what reasonable man will see a woman in this condition and think about sex? How can he think about anything but helping her?
Thank you very much. I love that big screen, except the pause button was in the way of the subtitles. Sorry about that. I would like to hear from you. I guess we don't have a lot of time. I'm here as long as you can stand to ask questions and give me your opinions, and we can have a discussion. But I guess what I'd like to hear is, when you think about how to handle the sex trade in Malta, what are the most difficult questions you can think of? What are the tough questions? What are the impolite questions that you want to ask? I would like to hear what those questions are, and then I'll try and focus my remarks on what might be most useful. Anybody have?
Does anyone want to ask a question?
Hello, Albert Budzicz. If one had to draw a profile of a sex worker, profile of the person, the personality, what makes a person go into this trait? Let's say, use the word trait. So what is the profile, the character, the personality traits of that person?
Okay, great. Some more?
Yes. Yeah. I do have a question. It follows on to what Honorable Buttigieg said. How do you break the cycle? We know it's intergenerational. So what were case studies of success in breaking the cycle? I mean, I heard that woman on the video saying my grandmother, my mother, and myself. So she seems not to, you know, be in the situation anymore. What got her out of the situation? How did it help? How?
What causes intergenerational prostitution?
Well.
Yes. It's typical here. It's typical every place. Good one. Yeah.
My question also links to what my colleagues have asked, but besides personality traits, are there any other factors, such as economic and social factors, that contribute to women resorting to prostitution?
Okay.
What I am interested is about the differences between a person who chooses to be a sex worker and those who are in a human trafficking ring, prostitution ring. So that is quite fundamental for me. And because I would make a difference between a person who chooses, I'm going to do inverted commas, because usually the particular situations now make you choose. I think if you were to restrict those persons who really want to do that work, it would be restricted a lot, because then there are the different scenarios, what makes you do it, but there is a difference between a person who still chooses to do it and those who are really forced by other persons and not just by circumstances to do it.
Grazie alla Gallia. Two questions. One, what is the age range we are speaking about? Like the youngest up to the eldest, on average, of course. And the second question, we listened to the video and we understand that there are a number of cases, most of the cases that are intergenerational. So my mother was a prostitute, my grandmother was a prostitute. But are there actually new persons who, either because it's their decision or else because the situation in general has led them to prostitution because they didn't have any other way of living? What percentage are we speaking about? Like how many are family-based and actually how many are, they just started themselves the prostitution, pursuing themselves but their parents, their mothers, their grandmothers were not involved in such an industry. Of course, as an average, so that we are aware of what we are talking about. Thank you.
Honorable Graciela Tarpelli.
May I add, please, both from your point of view as professionals working with women who are in prostitution and also from the women who are actually in prostitution, is prostitution viewed as a profession or is it actually a job, in inverted commas, that they are coerced into? What is your side on this, sort of what is your professional take on this, but also you that work so close and directly with women who are actually in this situation, how you can say that they view it as well. Thank you.
Honourable Davina.
Yes, I would like to see your comments regarding what, apart from they are normalized, like we saw in the video, that normally they follow the footsteps of their parents and aunties. What are the most common factors that put these people into this job?
Okay. If I may, another question, please. Go ahead. These are great questions. Thank you. How common is it that the partner, the husband, the boyfriend prostitutes his partner, his wife, his girlfriend? So he's actually exploiting her. Of course, it's not true love, but how common is it that such instances happen? Thank you.
Okay, that's seven. Maybe take one more.
Yes, may I?
Then,
the last one.
And then you can interrupt me any time.
We are speaking about women in as a sex workers. Is this also the case of male sex workers? So is this a phenomenon regarding only women or also...
Or transgender.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm going to start in on this now. Feel free to interrupt me. I really mean that. And I'll stop in a few minutes. I need a... Can I get a phone out here with a clock so I can watch myself? So I'll cover this issue of who gets into prostitution. What's the profile? What are the risk factors that drive a person? And you notice, please notice the word drive or channel. The vast majority of those in prostitution, and I don't think this is a surprise to anybody who thinks about what it's really like. I try to be able to talk about this in polite language, but I do want you to know it's very difficult. Prostitution is not an abstract concept. It's brutal. In fact, most people can't even look up very close to it. Don't let me get out of here without telling you that I visited Pacheville Strip Club last night and what I found there. Have any of you been in any of them? Yeah. It's pretty important to see. It's important to go and look up close and describe what you're seeing. So who gets into it? There are three main driving factors, and a lot is variations of this. There are three bars on the cage that limit or constrict life choices of human beings. One is sex, male or female. So in general, most prostitution is female. In our research in 9 countries on 5 continents, we have always interviewed men who say they're women, that is trans women, and we've also interviewed men. So the quick answer to that one is it's the same thing, regardless of sex. Boys, young men that get into prostitution come from the same kind of background as women do, and those backgrounds include poverty or economic, great, serious economic stress. Today, more and more, it has to do with the pressure of migration. People don't migrate because they hear Malta's a great place. They migrate because they need to leave, because of civil conflict, because of climate change, because of collapsed or failed economies. That's why people go to another country. They don't, you know. So you have civil conflict, poverty, most often female. The vast majority of people in prostitution are women and girls. And there's one other factor that I'm going to go into quite a bit tomorrow night, which is racism and ethnic prejudice. In any country, racism is a major factor in coercing people into prostitution. And when you have all three factors, racism, poverty, and sex, it gets rougher and rougher. And usually you add to that, as Anna and Maria have been, and I've been talking about for a couple of days, you add to that a history of sexual abuse or sexual assault early in one's life that you could say determines and describes what she's worth as a child. In fact, psychologists often see incest and familial sexual abuse where a child is rewarded with attention or love or an ice cream as a crude variant and even boot camp for prostitution later. It's the same model. A pimp, I once heard a pimp say, I don't need to train her too much. Her dad already did that for me. And he wasn't joking or kidding around. He meant it. So that's who gets into prostitution, roughly. There's a lot more information. We know about that and are looking at that. But that's who gets in. So it's men and women and trans people. And that's who gets in. Age range, it depends on the severity of the poverty and the economy she's living in. When I use the word she, that includes men and boys. It depends on the economy. So what's in order to the hot issue so often in this in these discussions is who is making a choice and when is it coerced? And to me, I need to define what is a choice. Okay? So let's start with choice. Choice to those of us in this room for the most part means, do I want a chocolate or strawberry ice cream cone? They're both sitting in front of me. That's a choice. Do I want to be a psychologist or a computer tech or a journalist? That's a choice. Prostitution looks like a choice all the time. That's necessary for the business. I've sometimes called it the business of sexual exploitation. Because that's what it is. All of the women in this room are able to say, no, get your hands off me. In my country, I could file legal charges against somebody who touches me in a way I don't like. Can't do that in prostitution. The name of the job is sexual harassment. That's what it is. And yes, sometimes, once in a while, a woman is able to bring a charge of rape. But let's look at the issue of choice. If she was choosing who she wanted to have sex with, she would not choose a sex buyer, a client, or that's not who she's. It's not sex for her. It's the performance of a sex act that's coerced by the need for money or poverty. That's why she's doing it. So it might be sex for him, the buyer, but it's not sex for her. It's the performance of a sex act in order, most often, to obtain the necessities of life, which are documented in the UN Declaration of Human Rights, which is the right to housing, food, medical care, health care, and an education most of the time. This is what most progressive cultures think human beings are entitled to. Somehow, the payment of money in prostitution hides all of those human rights violations. In fact, I heard a sex bot, I didn't hear it, but I, one of our interviewers described a man who said, well, I'm helping her put food on the table. I'm paying her. And of course, it didn't occur to her, to him, to go out and buy her a bag of groceries. No. He is extracting the performance of a sex act in exchange for money, which she then is often, in many parts of the world, including here, including in my country, extracting the tolerance of sexual assault in exchange for money, necessities, or whatever is needed in life. In the U.S. today, people generally don't know this, but it is common that teenage girls who are prime property for pimps to sell, teenagers, anywhere from 14 to 17 is just adolescence and right afterwards. Teenagers are turning tricks, as we say in the U.S., after school to bring in money to feed the whole family. And, of course, our current administration is stopping social safety nets for people who need assistance for shelter and food and assistance in raising their kids. So there's a lot to think about and unlock when we're talking about choice. Generally speaking, the people in prostitution that all of us know about and that we see, they have very little choice. And they have told me and many other researchers and many NGOs that if they could be out of prostitution, they would get out today. If they could make that amount of money cleaning toilets, they would do it in a heartbeat. But they need the money. And because a lot of women, most women, don't want to prostitute, the price is higher than cleaning toilets. So that's why they're in it. So let me, you know, I made a mistake. I did not bring this diagram, which I call the coercion diagram. If you imagine an upside-down triangle, 2% are at the top. That 2% are actually making a choice. They are deciding. They might have the same level of middle-class privilege, of educational privilege, of race privilege. They might have enough privilege that they can say, I'm gonna go, and this is what, in a little partial response to your question, I'm gonna spend the summer working at Deja Vu, and I'm gonna earn a lot of money, and I'm gonna bring in 7,000 or 8,000 euro, and that'll pay for the first 2 years of my education. Woohoo! It's easy to get into prostitution. It is not easy to get out. It doesn't look good on your resume to have a blank period of a year and a half. It's not good for your psyche. It doesn't exactly lead to confidence in going to school to have been treated the way men treat women in prostitution. In fact, it's humiliating. It's psychologically traumatizing. And it's taken me a long time to learn this, because when I first got into this field, I was horrified by the level of physical violence, just what is done to women's bodies in prostitution is brutal. But no, the psychological damage is worse and it lasts longer. When you're treated, and I can't even say the words that women are called in prostitution, they're a kind of horrific combination of racism and sexism joined together, if you can imagine, while she is being raped. And I call it raped because it's an unwanted sex act. She would love to get the money with nothing else. So up at the top is 2%. I'm happy to provide any of you with documentation of that. Believe it or not, 2% who make a choice have relatives that after the first gang rape, she can exit and say, I'm out of here. I don't have my flat anymore. I'm staying at your apartment. That's choice to get out. The other choice is she has enough money to keep her going and resources to keep her going. She's trying to earn money for a special part of her life. She's not trying to earn money for food and shelter. She's trying to earn money for college or something like that. So 2% comes from people that I disagree with politically. In case you haven't noticed, I don't think it's work. I think it's a human rights violation, and I don't think it's sex. That's based on hundreds of interviews with exited survivors. Don't let me forget to talk about the difference between sex worker advocates, who are very easy to get a hold of and want to come here and talk to you, sex worker advocates that are currently prostituting and often are under pimp duress or earning most of their money from pimps, and I include as pimps businessmen, investors in large strip club chains, taxi drivers, hotel owners. I'm not just talking about some guy, tough-looking guy with a gold chain on the corner. No, those are the way lower end. The people with the big money are sitting in a high-rise apartment right now, figuring out their bank accounts and how they can launder it and move it someplace. It's a cash business. It's perfect for money laundering. I once talked to somebody when we were doing research for the U.S. State Department in Nevada, which, as you know, is probably the only place in the U.S. that has actual legal prostitution. And I talked to a taxi driver, and I talked to the FBI, the local police, the state police. How much money do you think was made 10 years ago in all arms of the sex industry in one city, Las Vegas? Anyone want to take a guess? Wild guess? This would be massage brothel prostitution, strip club prostitution, escort or call girl prostitution, which is nothing but the pimp gives her a cell phone. There's nothing high-end about it, except that if you call it high-end, the pimp extracts more money from the customer. So it's the same thing. It's decked out looking like silk sheets and the expensive hotel. But, okay, nobody wants to guess. Okay, I can see we're tied to empirical data here. Good. Between 1 and 6 billion a year, 10 years ago in one city. These are estimates, so it's big range. That's a lot of money. That's why we're all struggling with this, and that's why it's so hidden, because if people looked up real close to it, it wouldn't look so good. It's a very cruel form of predation on vulnerable people. So we have, I still have my imaginary slide up here of an inverted triangle. We have 2% up at the top. Then we have about 40% that are coerced by poverty, a lack of ability to feed or clothe their children, and a need for housing. Housing is a huge issue in prostitution. There's a 75% rate of homelessness in the lives of people in prostitution. Do you want to interrupt me and say something? Okay. Feel free if you do. So the quick answer to, so we have 40% that are dealing with really toxic racism, poverty, and as a poverty researcher knows, which is not me, but I've read those studies, poverty is intergenerational. It's hard to get out of poverty without serious support from a state. And if we don't provide, by we I mean NGOs, state governments, concerned international groups, if we don't provide housing and food, we know who does. Pimps. It's as simple as that. The whole thing is pretty simple. So we have 40%, and then down at the bottom we have 60% who are frankly under essentially slave-like conditions. They are not able to leave. I suspect, can I prove it? No, but have I got a lot of research data to show it? I'm not able yet to prove it on Pacheville, but I briefly talked to two women last night in that strip club, one from Poland, one from Romania, and nobody can tell me that either of those women could just say, I'm ready to walk out, even though they insisted that, hey, they love the job. You know, we were seen as, several of us went there, and we were seen as potential marks, customers, money, you know, money. The drinks are watered down and cost, what, 9.5 euros for a watered-down drink. And there were probably three pimps watching us at all time and a camera in my face. And despite the fact that the women were saying, we love it, it's fun, life was boring, I'm having a good party, Malta is a beautiful place, I'm so happy I came here, I don't think they really could walk out. I doubt it very much. And having interviewed many, many women who are out of that situation and once were, they've told me that they say these stories of, you know, the kind of tough approach. Oh, you don't know. What do you know about this? I'm making a lot of money. I'm going to buy an apartment. I'm going to buy a car. I'm having a good time with a lot of nice people. You know, it's not that way. It's a self-protective thing almost, both for her and to protect her from police or someone else.
I do have another question for you.
Okay.
Is there work being done or research being done as to why these women or men or transgender people actually have clients?
Actually have what?
Clients. People who seek their services. The question is, there is prostitution because there is a clientele for prostitution,
demand.
No?
Demand.
There is a demand for prostitution.
There's a demand for 24/7 access to women sexually.
Yes, why?
Let's spell out what the demand is. It's for sexual access. Why do men demand sexual access?
Why? Or maybe other women demand it, or maybe other people demand it. I mean, I don't think it's only men.
Are some women clients of prostitutes? Men club prostitutes? Yes. Their whole businesses in North America of middle-aged and older white women who like to go to Mexico and buy cute brown men. Yeah, that's a minor percentage of all of it, but it certainly does exist. But so it's mainly men's demand for sexual access to women. And the question is,
has any work been done to see why these people seek prostitutes? Why? Why do they seek?
What a great question. And may I tell you that that's what the three of us are doing. It took me 10 years. Congratulations to you. You're coming up with that question in half an hour.
I spent a lot of time with her, you know.
You learned from your student. It took me 10 years to get there. I'm like, wait, I know how bad it is. I know how bad women are getting hurt and how much they want to get out. Who's making the choice here? It's not her. It's his choice. The first, in answer to that, and we've now studied six countries, including legal prostitution in Germany, which is some of the most horrific prostitution I've ever seen in my life. One of the myths about prostitution is if we regulate it, legalize it, decriminalize a pimp and call him a manager, it's going to get better. This thing was moving fast. There's a study out of the London School of Economics, a study of 100... What? Say, tell me.
There was a comment that we have legalized prostitution. We haven't. Categorically, we haven't.
It's very complicated. It's tolerated. It's ignored. There's a law in the books. The law is not enforced. Look at the supposedly nice model Sweden. Would you like to know how many men have been prosecuted under that law? That great, famous law? About 300 in one year. And of course, never any men with significant power. It's only kind of poor men, migrant men. They're the ones that get busted. So I share your confusion about whether or not it's legal, tolerated, sort of legal here but not there, etc. It's very confusing.
One question. So 2% was prostitution as a choice. 60% were slaves, right? And the 40% is...
No, 40% are pressured and coerced. And in response to the question of, well, not coerced by circumstances, but coerced by force, one of the big things that's not known about prostitution is mental coercion. There's this image of coercion as a gun to the head, kidnapping from a nightclub. No, 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 no. It's much more. Don't ever, ever underestimate pimps. They know more about mental control of another human being than I do as a psychologist. I'm not exaggerating. They know how to get you or me to do X, Y, or Z within about 2 or 3 days. They convince us to do something, move a little bit in that direction, or... Let me tell you about a pimp I know who used to be in a nightclub and where there was a lot of prostitutes, a strip club actually. He had a son and decided he didn't want to be a pimp anymore in a nightclub. And then he had a spiritual experience and decided he was going to help people like me and tell us all the truth. It was wonderful. I have two days of filming of him. But he described hiring women who were looking for low-level entry jobs, waitresses, bartenders. This was his whole strategy, was a plan. He'd hire them, and then one day after they got used, and he described this in detail, after they got used to lap dancing, guys going into the back room with a woman for 15 minutes for 100 euros, after they got used to seeing that, he'd approach them and say, One of our dancers is 2 hours late tonight. Would you just get up on the stage? Just take your top off. Not your bottoms, just your top. Just for an hour until she gets here. He had it all planned out. That's simple. I'm happy to share with anybody who wants it an article I wrote with a survivor of prostitution and an expert in dissociation and mind control about how pimps use tactics of mind control that are very similar to what state torturers use, you know. So, what about the rest? 2% actually have a choice to get in or get out. 40% are coerced by poverty, racism, and sexism, and a few other factors, but those are the big ones. And 60% are living under, frankly, slave-like conditions, where they are not permitted to leave under any circumstances. They are controlled by protein intake, sugar intake, social isolation, exhaustion, random acts of extreme violence. That's a really good way to control somebody. Traumatic head injury. You hit somebody in the head, it's pretty terrifying. And it doesn't damage. The pimps don't hit women in the face. If you see a bruised woman, that's probably from a client or sex buyer. Pimps hit women in the head, and they get concussions just like somebody does in some sports. So, and then that's the conditions under which that 60%. People, yeah.
Whether it's the same situation here in Malta, is this scenario applicable abroad, or is it the same here in Malta?
We'll find out more, right? But
okay. So in Malta, and this is what I was thinking about it while she was speaking about this, and we sometimes we believe that in Malta we only have street prostitution, and now we are saying that street prostitution is not happening because we're not seeing women in prostitution in the streets. So our idea, unfortunately, being skewed by what we are seeing. But we know that prostitution is still happening, as Dar Hosea, because they are attending our services every day, and the numbers are increasing even at Dar Hosea. So prostitution, Malta, is still a big issue. And what we need to mention as well, Dr. Melissa mentioned that yesterday she was at a strip club. We know, and our women tell us that there are strip clubs, there are guest houses, there are hotels, there are crack houses, but this is all happening in Malta already. And if I may, as in something that I'm reflecting on as well, so far, we don't really speak about prostitution in general. We try, even on a policy level, we're here and we try to speak about it. Usually we speak about violence against women, that we speak a lot about, domestic violence we speak a lot about, but this is just the same. So prostitution, there's this, unfortunately, this added harm that the woman is being prostituted as well, apart from other forms of violence. So I think this is important because if we are going to normalize something that is already violent, unfortunately, the woman in prostitution and all victims will be more and more, as in the risk even of murder, as in there are a lot of studies that show that women in prostitution were murdered. And this happened where the situation was regularized. So once we regularize, or legalize, or decriminalize, or whatever, but once we regularize, what is an issue now, it will become a normality. And that is what concerns us at this point.
I wanted to add something that you would have noticed that Dr. Farley has never spoken about sex workers. All the questions from your side were about sex workers. And it's not a lapsus from her side. She knows what she's addressing. I would like to say, which work guarantees PTSD, mental health issues, violence, anything that is going to cause real problems? How can we call that work? This is something that it's all part of this normalization. It's all part. We are, as doctor. It's not in the law yet, and this is where it's legal. Yes.
Unfortunately, we have normalized massage parlors. They are mushrooming all over the country. We have legalized and give necessary support to strip clubs. So, in a way, we have. It's useless saying we did not, but we have.
What I'd like to say is it is very important that we understand that there is no high-end escorts, call girls, and then the poor prostitutes, the Dar Jose Aziz. There's no spectrum. There is no differences, okay? They all speak to us about violence. Violence from morning till night. It is something that they do not enjoy. It is something that they have to tolerate. And unfortunately, if we are normalizing this kind of, you call it work, I don't call it work, then it becomes something that's so easy to become intergenerational. When I became a doctor and I had a daughter, my daughter used to say, I won't be anything but a doctor. But in this case, because she thought I was working too much, but in the case of prostitution, it's not a choice. It is something that, yes, it is intergenerational. What strikes me is, when I speak to the mothers who have given up their children for prostitution, it's not because they're bad mothers, but because if they didn't, they would have been killed. So it is something, if they have so many mouths to feed, they have no option. And they do it not easily, as we sometimes think. It's not an easy thing. You would find somebody who would give you anything, and you would say, this is the only way to survive, and that is why they do it. And I don't think this is a choice by anybody. It is something that will keep you alive. That's how they thrive.
Aware of the recent report by the UN Special Rapporteur Reem Al-Salem on prostitution and trafficking. She is a UN Special Rapporteur. This report came out, I think it was last year, 2024. It's a phenomenal report, and it does address issues of policy, and she spent, you know, all of her time for a year interviewing states, parties, and NGOs all over the world. She's in Brussels with the UN, but she is Jordanian, and she would be quite an amazing person to invite for a consultation. Lacking that, I'm happy to send that report to anybody who is interested. Would you make a list of things you want me to send you and put that at the top of the list? It's fabulous. Can I say something about compartmentalization? This is how sex trade businessmen make money. Take the issue of strip clubs. What does everybody call them in Malta? This drives me nuts. Gentlemen's clubs. I'm going to ask you for a personal favor. Please don't ever use that expression again. I can't even use the word strip club because it's strip club prostitution. Three of us walked into a strip club last night on the street where you all know they're located. Within 5 minutes, less, we walked in, we're looking around, there are all these poles and places to sit. We went there right at 10, so not much was happening. It mostly happens later. I went up to the pimp at the corner of the bar, and I said, when does the dancing start? Because I was hoping to talk to a couple of the women there. And he looked at me and the three of us together, and he said, the show doesn't start until about midnight, but now for 100 euros, you can go right there for a private dance for 10 minutes, 100 euros. All three of you can go in together. He assumed we were, I don't know, what, some kind of party animals. I mean, three of you can go in together, it's 100 a person, and of course, that I cringe at that, because any woman in prostitution will tell you there's nothing worse than a group of drunk men together on her. But he was offering me prostitution within 2 minutes of entering that club. And I said to my colleagues, who I kind of dragged there, and they were like, what is this woman, what is she taking us to? I've been in many strip clubs in many parts of the world. I have never seen, and you can quote me on this, I have never seen such a blatant prostitution as in that club last night. Usually it's a little more subtle. They hide it. No, you can't go back there, honey. That's the lap dance area. And they pretend lap dances are not prostitution. Nobody thinks that, do they? You think lap dance is not prostitution? No, nobody thinks that. Huh?
It gives access to prostitution.
No, it is prostitution. I'm going to be blunt here. It is prostitution. In a lap dance area, you will find empty condoms all over the place. You will find women who are digitally raped all the time. All she's wearing is a G-string. Where do you think his hands are going? So that's rape. That's an unwanted sex act. And it's dangerous for her. It's billed as something separate from prostitution. Do you see how the compartmentalization, this is a gentleman's club, this is a lap dance. They're so good at convincing all of us that this isn't as bad as that. That even pimps will say, oh, I hate child prostitution, I'm against it. Do you believe that for 5 seconds? No. That's the big money maker is children. Anywhere an adult sex trade exists, which is around large groups of male tourists, military, big electronic conventions, anywhere there's a large group of men, there are children for sale. Because they're pimps are not trying to be mean to anybody. They're trying to control people. They are trying to make money. They're just businessmen, and that's how you make money. You compartmentalize part of the sex trade as okay and say, let's look over here, not here. Okay? This is the bad stuff. To me, the parallel, it's okay, they're worked up over there. So. But do you have any comment? I'd like to hear it.
No, I do fully concur with your appraisal, because unfortunately, massage parlors have been legalized here in Malta, and we all know that massage parlors are a structure to cover prostitution, even strip clubs or gentlemen's clubs. I'm a former mayor of St. Julian, so I do know about one or two strip clubs.
Thank you.
They are just a cover-up for prostitution. But still, legally, there's nothing else one can do, because they are legally. So what can we do? It's useless doing this discussion, because technically, legally, we are not.
Well,
you might have to
change the law.
Yeah,
I'm not a politician, so I could say things like that and then go home. But you do know, as I know, that in many parts of the world, there are very bad laws. We have laws in the United States that pretend to be anti-trafficking laws. In fact, they're anti-immigration laws. They're racist, prejudiced, awful laws. But they're cloaked with an anti-trafficking presentation. So that's just one example. So, I mean, I don't know if anyone wants to talk about possible legal responses. If your goal is to stop prostitution, as mine is, if you're convinced from the evidence that there is no place in the world where you can control prostitution, the pimps who run the legal brothels in Germany, and they're organized crime experts who have all kinds of, I can share all kinds of testimony, and I'm going to tell you how, where this is located online. You can get a copy of it. If someone wants a hard copy of it, I'm sorry, I just have one. But the legal brothels, or decriminalized prostitution, which is a form of legal prostitution. Do you all understand that? There's no decriminalized prostitution that's not zoned. You can't, in New Zealand, when they passed that law, you couldn't have a brothel right next to a school or a child care center or the homes of the city fathers. Prostitution was zoned into the places where people who couldn't afford the legal battle to keep prostitution out of their backyards lived. That's where prostitution is zoned. In my city, in Auckland, in Christchurch, and every place else. So there's no such thing as non-zoned controlled prostitution. In Germany, yes, as this woman was saying, there are multi-story brothels with the Romanians on the bottom, black women next layer, then the other women. So can I just say one thing about talking to sex worker advocates about this issue? Because if it becomes known that any of you are going to be having a discussion about a legal approach to prostitution, they're going to be on you and asked to testify. And because their testimony is such blatant lies much of the time, my job has been to counteract that. But I want you to know who they are and why. If someone says, I'm a sex worker in Malta, it's great, I'm making a lot of money, and no, don't go decriminalizing our buyers. You'll be taking food out of our table. So we did a study of some of the most well-known sex worker advocates, and do you know what they turned out to be? Do you want to take a guess? They had convictions for trafficking. They presented themselves to advocacy groups, to city commissions, to groups of political policymakers like yourselves, and they said, this is what we want. We have a union. Everything's okay. We're earning good money. We support each other. I have a list of 12 people from 8 countries, and I will give you the convictions they have if you're at all curious. I'm just going to tell you a couple of them. The woman who founded in the U.S. Sex Workers Outreach Project, who presents herself as a sex worker, she has a conviction of promoting interstate prostitution. Not a charge, a conviction. The Canadian woman, Terry Jean Bedford, who helped change the Canadian, who fought the Canadian law. Canada has a great law on prostitution. It's an abolitionist law that says the woman in prostitution or the man or the child is a victim, not a criminal. We're never going to arrest them. They also say pimps are controlling women. Traffickers are controlling women. We're going to arrest them and throw serious charges at them. The one that is argued about is the sex buyer, the client, the customer. Some people, especially these sex worker advocates, will go to the battle, end of the battle. Don't arrest them. Why? That's at the core of the whole thing, men's demand for access to prostitution. So Bedford was convicted of running a brothel. Douglas Fox, the International Union of Sex Workers in the UK, advocate, advisor to Amnesty International. I love Amnesty on some issues. They're terrible on prostitution. They asked a pimp to advise them on their law. And this guy has been arrested for living off the earnings of prostitution and co-manages an escort agency. That's cell phone prostitution. Eliana Gil in Mexico, Global Network of Sex Work Projects, testifies before all kinds of groups on how sex work is a good way for women to earn a living. She's been convicted of trafficking. So look into the background of someone who says, I'm a happy sex worker and I'm a sex worker advocate, and I want to tell you and you and you about prostitution, because you may be getting some inaccurate information, to put it politely.
Okay,
I'm going to stop.
We're going to have to close soon because some of us have to go to plenary. Do we have any other further? No problem. Thank you. Do we have any other questions? No more questions? Maybe a final comment?
One last comment from my end. No, prostitution is not legal. As it is, prostitution is not illegal, but the law needs to change because we cannot stay criminalizing women for loitering. So the law needs to change. However, one small comment is that someone mentioned that massage parlors, strip clubs, we cannot do anything about them just because they are legalized. And this is exactly what concerns us. Once we legalize or decriminalize, so once we regularize, we cannot do anything about it because it is okay for it to be done, as in they have the green light to do it. So this is exactly what concerns us. We cannot normalize something because once it's there and once it's legal, women cannot be protected any longer.
I can see, just as a final comment, I can see that maybe something can be done by this for strip clubs, but it's more complicated when it comes to massage parlors, for the simple reason that obviously we have people who are qualified, who also run beauty therapists, who also run massages, and it gets to be very, very complex over there.
But
still, I mean, how can you distinguish? It's very, very difficult to distinguish.
But they don't require a license, and that makes it more
for the time being,
yes, because they can control.
Had 200 hours of training in therapeutic massage, and they're not shy about that. Yes, in response to that, pimps sometimes come up with fake licenses, but a good agency can track them down. And victims need to be able to testify without being forced to testify in public against their pimps when they don't have long-term protection. You cannot ask a victim to show up in an open court when her pimp is waiting outside and Lord knows what's going to happen to her if she publicly testifies. The U.S. dealt with that. They had a horrible, we had a horrible law. I don't even consider myself a U.S. citizen anymore. I'm a citizen of friends who think that there are certain human rights in the world, not just my country right now. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm taking up your time.
The last thing I'd like to say is I think working with our women at Dar Hosea, one of the most pressing issues is being homeless. So many of them are homeless, many of them have issues with drugs, many of them have very, very serious mental problems. So it's such a concoction that it's not giving them money. We have to really look at the problem with all the facets that it has, and we need to help them. Sometimes when we ask them, what is it that you would like? Sometimes it's just some peace and quiet, somewhere where to go and to rest. That is what they really need. And we don't have anywhere where they can rest. They are not allowed in shelters. They are chucked out of everywhere. They are not allowed at Mount Carmel Hospital. They are not allowed anywhere. So the streets become their homes. And as Dr. Farley heard her say this week, just try sleeping a couple of nights in the street and then start thinking of what it really is to be homeless, to be hungry, and to be concentrated, to be a prostitute, because that's the only way that will help you eat. Thank you.
Let him, for listening and staying for this and for caring about this issue. I'm very serious. I could be your personal librarian. Please contact me, and I will be happy to provide you with information. A lot of people have been tackling this issue, and we've learned a lot in the last 15, 20 years. And there's a lot of good research, and there's some more coming your way. But thanks so
thank
much.
You. Thank you very much, Dr. Annavella, Dr. Farley, Ms. Porch Pelicano. Thank you so much for joining us today. U ħana laqgħu hawnhekk din il-laqgħa u se naġġornaw għal aktar tarda l-ixxar. Grazzi ħafna.